You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Cipressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to take a second and thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neurolinguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want some more info on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And when you sign up for the daily recovery support calls, just use the promo code Beyond Your Past. That's Beyond Your Past, all one word, and receive 50% off your first month's membership. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing the episode with one person who may find it helpful and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. That would be awesome. If you'd like to help support this podcast for as little as 99 cents per month, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and click on the support link at the top of the page. Your generous support of any amount helps us to continue bringing you new episodes every single week. So today we're honored to welcome back Miranda Pacchiana. Miranda joined us back on episode 50 way back in 2017, and she's returning today to talk about the challenges of disclosing your abuse to family members. Miranda is an MSW and coach working with survivors of childhood sexual abuse and helping work through the second wound of trauma. During our chat with Miranda, she shares what exactly the second wound is, why she started her website, Facebook group, and podcast to help survivors as they work through their trauma. We dive into the challenges of disclosing your trauma to family members and the different dynamics that will be present when you do. Miranda and I discuss how we went about working through these challenges since our stories are similar, but do have some differences that allow us to bring different points of view to the conversation. This is such an important topic, and Miranda has a wealth of knowledge that she wants to share with us. Be sure and check out her website, secondwound.com, and all the information about her podcast and social media is there as well. So let's join this chat with Miranda Pacchiana, starting right now. So hey, Miranda, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. It's Matt and Joanne. How are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here, Matt.
It is super awesome to talk to you again. You joined us. I was just talking to Joanne before we started recording. Way back episode 50, which was like over 100 episodes ago. So it was so cool to reach out to you recently and schedule time to get you back here on the show to talk about the aftermath of trauma and re-victimization mm-hmm. and all kinds of things around intergenerational trauma. But before we get into that, if you want to take a second and say hello to everybody, that would be great.
Okay. Well, it's my pleasure to be back on. In fact, that was my first podcast interview that I'd ever done way back then. And I even embedded it on my website, and a number of people ended up listening to it and sort of getting to know me that way. So that was really helpful to me. Thank you. And I so enjoyed talking to you, and just, you know, having an outlet to reach out to people about the work that I've been doing.
Well, that's awesome, Miranda. So, you know, I'm new to you. I didn't have the pleasure of being with you guys at Max episode 50 and for your first podcast. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background so
I would love to. Yeah, it's nice to meet you over the phone. So my background is I am both a mental health professional. I'm an MSW, Master's in Social Work. I'm also a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, which is how I got into this area. And I'm also a writer. And the way that that came about is that when I was, I mean, I came to terms with my own abuse back when I was in my mid-20s and I was married and sort of safely had my own life going on and I had some space from my family. And because it was an older brother who abused me, disclosing to my family became a very complicated situation. I disclosed to them, I told them about it. And at first my family was supportive and my brother even admitted it. And then as time went on, I found from my own personal experience that things weren't going the way that I hoped that they would, which was that I imagined that my family and I would work on addressing what had gone wrong and look at it together and how it had affected me and perhaps even why my brother had done this and then work to heal from it together. And that's how I operate. And that's how I needed to address it to get better, you know, because it really did affect my life and my, you know, I carried around shame as a child and I had a lot of work to do to work through that. And as time went on, my family got more and more, they wanted to kind of brush it under the rug in a major way. And as I pushed against that and said, you know, we really need to address it. We even need to be aware of there's actually other people in the extended family who had committed sexual abuse, according to, you know, people in the family. And so, you know, I was very aware of like protecting minors from exposure to them. And also, I really wanted my brother to have some responsibility and accountability for, you know, caring about what had happened to me and how I was doing with it. And as I pushed toward that, my family started really pushing back. And my brother, the abuser, was quite hostile to me. And I started getting kind of hostility. Anyway, it's a very long story of decades of going back and forth trying to deal with this. And it was so painful for me that while I was able to heal really well, actually, from the original abuse through hard work and therapy and a loving, supportive husband and network of friends, this is what I call the second wound. It's a trauma that comes from the response from my family. And the fact that I was never able to get the support that I needed and that I was even ostracized from family events, things like that, as a result of disclosing this, this was so painful for me that I started looking into why does this happen? Is this a common phenomenon? Is there literature, psychology research about this? And I just came up totally empty. And so eventually, after almost 20 years, I decided that I was going to need to be the one to start writing about it and start talking about it. And so I started out with a Facebook page and a small website that I've since greatly expanded. And I call my platform The Second Wound. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. And I have opened up this topic and I found that there was a whole community of survivors out there dealing with the exact same thing, feeling just as confused, just as hurt and lonely and alone. And we found each other. And, as I heard back from so many fellow survivors and they told me their stories, I mean, every single day I get contacted now on all my different platforms from someone wanting to reach out and tell me some of their story. I learned that there's a pattern that it's so common. It may be even more common than a family that supports someone who has been a victim of sexual abuse within the family or assault. And so I started writing more published articles in places like the Huffington Post, The Mighty. I have several articles, Psych Central, and describing this, the common things that happen. One of my articles is called 7 Ways Family Members Re-Victimize Sexual Abuse Survivors. And So it's really started to grow, and I'm looking into other projects, and I recently launched a podcast of my own called Truth and Consequences, Navigating the Aftermath of Trauma, which is not just about this topic, actually, but I do devote a fair amount of it to the second wound and what it is and how it affects people. So that's where I am right now.
Well, Miranda, I'm very proud of you for going through this journey and, you know, putting out all of this information when you couldn't find the information out there. It sounds like you've helped so many people with being open and sharing your experiences with others. But I was wondering, like, you know, a lot of people, when they don't have the support from their family and friends, and they tend to shut down, they tend to just hide it, you know, and move on with their life and just suppress all of their thoughts or experiences. But you didn't do that. You kept, you know, wanting to talk about it. And what was it within you that allowed you to be able to keep moving forward and to trying to overcome this, trying to talk about it, trying to prevent it?
That's a really great question. And I have two answers to that. One is, I would have to say that I would even give my family some credit there, because despite the description, the situation that I'm describing to you, you know, most families are complicated. You know, every family has issues, and most people and most families are not all good or all bad. There were a lot of good things that I did get from my family growing up. And one of them was, although in many ways I see now that my voice was consistently being shut down, in other ways, we did talk about things in the family. And I did express myself to my mother a lot, for one. And she allowed me to do that. Now, it's, again, it's difficult, because while she would acknowledge me and even apologize, she would tend to go back to the very same behaviors that had upset me. And that's, you know, long term, that's how it's ended up for me. But I did feel like I could, like, it's sort of hard to describe. I would also go back to the other reason, which is that I have a survivor instinct. And that is something that I have seen in so many of my fellow survivors, that I hear their stories and they break my heart. And I just can hardly believe what people have put them through. And yet they keep going and they create wonderful lives for themselves, and they find ways to be whole and be happy despite this. And I just know that ever since I was a little kid, I had kind of a rebel spirit in me that you wouldn't know it. I was always very well behaved, and I didn't want to get in trouble and things, but I wanted to take care of myself, and I wanted to have a good life, and I wanted to overcome obstacles. I actually had my 50th birthday party a few months ago, and I tell a story about it actually in my first podcast episode. It was this really beautiful moment where I had a big party full of my friends, and my friends had secretly sewn me a quilt that they all contributed to, and they presented it to me at my party. And I was like up on we had a little stage because I had a band, and they brought me up and put me in front of the microphone. And I thanked everybody, and I told the story about that I used to have a therapist in my early 20s, the one who helped me initially come to terms with my abuse, who used to tell me that I was like the princess and the pea in the fable, that no matter how many comfortable mattresses she had, if there was a little pea at the very bottom of them, you know, I would feel it. And I couldn't rest until I addressed it. And that's the way I've always been, for better or for worse. It's a blessing and a curse. But I can't just know that there's something really wrong and let it fester. So you know, it did take me until I was about 25 years old to come to terms with the abuse that I had suffered. I'd always remembered it, but I hadn't admitted to myself what it was. But that's just the defense of denial. And that's, you know, that's what my psyche needed to do to take care of me until I was in a place where I was safe to address it. So that's a long answer to your question, but I think that most of us have the strength deep down inside us somewhere. And that if we can have the ingredients that it takes, whether it's being safely, having some other supports other than your family, or just being in a safer place in your life. Some people don't address this stuff until they're in their 50s and 60s. And that just increases my admiration that they're able to do it at that point. So
you mentioned several key things, and I kind of latched on to the rebel mindset that you mentioned, because growing up, I was very similar in that I was a rebel in some ways, but I was also not necessarily one who wanted to outwardly get in trouble very often. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of mindset, that kind of personality, you know, a little bit of a rebel, but also more of kind of trying to stay without rocking the boat too much. Mm-hmm. It was both a hindrance and a positive thing when I started working through my trauma stuff. And as you mentioned, you know, it took years and years for you to get to that point. It took me over 20 years. It took Joanne a long time. It takes a lot of survivors years, you know, decades, sometimes even longer to start to work on this trauma stuff. And I think obviously a lot of it has to do with the grooming and the victimizing and the shame and all that. Yeah. And I think for me, you know, a lot of it was, I didn't want to rock the boat and draw attention to myself. I didn't want to rock the boat and risk talking with someone and having what I think happened to not be true. And then, you know, kind of so worrying about the shame aspect of that and worried about, you know, my memories of what I thought I had not being real and then feeling even more shame. So I think the underlying theme, you know, a lot of this is the shame of, I think I need help with this, but I'm not really sure how. I don't know what to do. What if everything that I think happened did not happen, then what do I do? And so I don't know if you can touch on that a little bit, because it's something that kind of jumped out at me as you were chatting, is just this whole, mostly just the whole shame aspect and how that kind of keeps us from reaching out for help once we realize that something happened to us when we were younger.
Yeah, well, there's a few issues there. I mean, you talked about being rebellious, but not wanting to rock the boat. I mean, I know what you mean, because I believe that so many of us in these situations end up being the kind of black sheep of the family, because we're not willing to go along with the groupthink in the family, which is really protective of the secrets and keeping things the way that they are. And when we stand up and say, hey, there's something wrong here, we all have to look at, you know, the emperor has no clothes. That often just doesn't fly. And so whether you want to call it a black sheep or a rebel, or it also falls into the category, you end up getting scapegoated for that, of being the troublemaker in the family. When you do have that shame that is so universal to survivors of sexual abuse, and you know, most of us carry it around, and it becomes so big in our lives and leaves us feeling like we are not, you know, we're not the same as other people. We're not worthy. We're not good. That can really make it scarier to take the risk of disclosing the abuse. And at the same time, it's kind of interesting, because you're both feeling that shame and that fear. But there's a part of us that also, that we were calling the rebel, that has the need to speak up and the need to, by doing that, go against the family dynamic and the family, often the family groupthink, which is protecting secrets and protecting the family at the expense of, you know, sometimes the truth or things like morality, that doesn't come first so much as protecting the family does. And so when we go against that, it's scary and it's truly a risk, because we often do get the kind of responses that you were, Matt, you were saying you were afraid to get, which is, you know, not being believed or having it be minimized, or maybe you can't trust your own memories. So it's a real risk, and it's especially scary when you don't have a solid foundation of knowing who you are, because you have been carrying this shame around and you have been doing it alone. Yeah.
And I think it also goes along with a dynamic of, not only are there many who live in a family or have a family dynamic that is intentionally covering up secrets, but also there are a number, you know, of survivors, you know, probably a large percentage as well, where the abuse was not necessarily perpetrated by, you know, a parent or, you know, somebody in the immediate family. Sure. So they may not even know anything ever happened. So not only, you know, do you have the risk of, if you're in a family where everybody's trying to cover it up and, you know, and risking the shame there, but you're also possibly in a family situation where nobody even knows anything but you, or maybe one other person. So, and then you get into the whole thing of, well, if I share the story about this person, or that family friend, or whoever it was that was the abuser, then all of a sudden, you know, you can, you know, you may have a whole different set of circumstances where the family obviously may not believe you, or they could believe you, but then it creates a black mark, and then all of a sudden you feel bad for ruining the family name. I mean, there's a whole other side of this too that I think goes along, but all with the same kind of potential outcome.
Yeah, which is so heartbreaking, because I think that black mark you describe is how so many of us feel about ourselves. And hopefully our family members won't see it that way. But, you know, I just want to reiterate what you guys already know, which is that it's not our shame to carry. You know, it's the person who perpetrated it upon us, even though our earliest feelings are that it is our shame, and that we really have to work and get help to overcome that sense about ourselves, right?
Yes. And, you know, that makes me think of one thing you mentioned earlier, is the survivor instinct. Now, a lot of people, like, we all have that, I believe, within us, but a lot of people don't recognize it, or they are afraid to tap into that. Were there any times when you were going through this experience where you did hush down that survivor instinct and you just stayed quiet for a while because you didn't know what else to do? What made you step out of that closet, you know, that you hid yourself in for that short time period or a long time period, whatever it was?
Yeah. So my abuse happened when, I don't know the exact ages, but I can narrow it down to between 7 and 9 or 10. So I carried it for a very long time. And did I ever quash that instinct? I absolutely did, because I had to survive in the circumstances that I was in. And the brother that abused me in my family had a lot of power. Even though I come from this, my parents are almost hippie types, very kind of liberal and loosey-goosey and loose with boundaries, which was actually, you know, a really upsetting thing for me growing up. But there was actually a real patriarchal system in the family, where my father was not a bad person, but he had a lot of limitations, and he was bipolar, and he had a lot of power in the family, because he could have an episode, or he could just be rageful. And everybody would kind of duck and cover and have to protect themselves. And my mother would cater to him, thinking that that was the way to get him to stop being so mad. And so I look back now and I see that my older brother and I had a similar dynamic, where he bullied me in various ways. And I was encouraged to just kind of be quiet and go along with it. And he was also, he loved to be the center of attention. And I was really encouraged to step back and be part of the applause, you know. So I didn't have outlets for, in fact, I did always try to speak up to a certain extent, and I got labeled, a line I heard my whole life from my siblings and my mother growing up and my dad was, it takes two to tango, which I've learned I'm not alone in this. And you know what? It doesn't take two to tango, and one's a child and one's a raging parent. You know, you don't ask for that. Even if you misbehave, you don't ask to be treated abusively. So I learned that that was a response I was going to get. And I did still speak up for myself, but a lot of times I didn't, because I knew the consequences. And it was really painful to not only have, you know, get raged at, but then also have my siblings who I cared about kind of reinforce that I brought it on myself. And I will tell you that more specifically, when I was in college, I actually spent a lot of time with my brother. He's very charming and good at getting what he wants. And I decided he was one of my best buddies. And we spent a lot of time and we were very friendly to each other. And yet, you know, there were things that would happen. Like, this is just an example that I always remember, is he once asked me if he could borrow a scarf of mine. And I told him, no, it was my favorite scarf and it was precious to me. And he went and took it anyway. And when he got back from spending a day in the city, and I realized he had done that, I confronted him and I said, hey, I told you you couldn't take my scarf. And he raged at me and called me all kinds of horrible swear words and threw things. And my point is just that, like, I couldn't stand up for myself in a reasonable way. You know, I never knew what the consequences were going to be. And I think that it was safer for me to stay in the family fold and kind of play the role that my family wanted me to play with him and have his affection and get approval for that. And it wasn't until years later that I came to terms with all of this that I looked back and I was like, ugh, that was kind of sick, because he wasn't treating me the way you should treat somebody. And I refused to let myself see it. So, you know, it's not as simple as, like, I had a survival instinct and I stood up for myself. Sure, I did. And in the long run, I did. But there were plenty of times when it just didn't make sense for me. And so I used my defenses and I buried my feelings and my voice. And what allowed me to finally, like you asked me, to step out of that was, I got married at 24, and I did a really good job picking my husband. I'm really proud of that. We're still together 26 years later, incredibly happy, have three kids we raised together. And he is my rock, and he just was such a safe place for me. We were just talking the other day about those years and me going through coming to terms with my abuse and kind of comparing notes of what we remembered. But, you know, I was in a lot of pain when I first dealt with it. And I had social anxiety. I was depressed. It took me about a year to kind of snap out of it. And he was just by my side every step of the way, even though we were in this really early marriage. And also we had our own home an hour away from my family. And so I was living my own life and I had my own support. And I think that's why I also had been in therapy for 2 years, because I had a lot of self-esteem issues and I had a lot of issues with my family, which probably won't surprise you, that kind of tortured me. I really wanted to be close to them and have things work, and it just kept going wrong. So my therapist and I did a lot of work on that. And I really had a strong trust in her. And it took me 2 solid years of working with her before one day I just said, you know what, this thing I've never talked about to anybody in my whole life, I'm just going to go in and talk to her about it. And I just kind of summoned all my courage and I did it. And I was able to go home to my own home away from my family and have my husband be there for me. So I think that that's not unusual, that it depends on where it is. You know, it can be it can take until you're 35 or 45 before you truly have that safe place to go to. But that's often when people do have the ability to come to terms with things that they weren't able to before.
Well, that's a really beautiful story and incredibly inspiring. And I am curious to see how liberated did you feel when you finally spoke about the situation to your therapist after 2 years of seeing your therapist?
Yeah, that's, gosh, I remember it really vividly. I remember just like plunking myself down and being like, okay, I have something to tell you. You know, it was this really loaded moment. And then I just kind of spit it out. This is what I remember happening. And she thanked me and she took it really seriously. And I even remember saying to her that I'm not a victim. And she was like, okay. And that for some reason that, you know, I just wasn't ready to fully come to terms with it. And so I needed to make this distinction. Not that there's anything wrong with being a victim. Yeah, I did. I felt really liberated. Well, first I went home and I told my husband that very night. And he, gosh, I'll try to tell it without choking up, but he just put his arms around me and he said, you know, that he was really sorry, but he also said, I'm really proud of you. And that was just like the perfect thing that he could have said. Exactly like you're asking, Joanne, once it came out, I did. I felt like I had dropped this weight I'd been carrying around forever. It's not quite that simple though. I did feel that. And I was really eager to get to work on it so that I could leave it behind me. And I remember my therapist being proud of me, but also saying to me, slow down, slow down. You don't want to go too fast. And I was like, I want to tell my mother. And then I want to tell my family. And then I want to talk about it. And she was like, okay, but she just kept kind of trying to warn me. And I think maybe because she knew that, you know, you do get complicated responses. It's never going to go as smoothly as you hope. And I did hit a lot of roadblocks along the way. And then, like I was saying, after that initial period, that's when I started to really feel the emotional repercussions. Like I was able to finally feel the things that I had buried for almost 20 years. And it freaking hurt, you know, like I really got in touch with that shame to the point where I was scared to go out in the world, even though I'm a pretty social person. And I had flashbacks of the abuse, which I had never had before. And I was just in a lot of pain for it. I was in my first year of graduate school, so I remember it as an academic year. And I remember it wasn't until the end of that year that I really just started to come out of that. And I felt so much lighter and so much better and so much more whole, you know, and that was really just the beginning of my journey. But it was a really solid beginning where I got a lot of work done by being that closely in touch with my past and my trauma.
Yeah. When you get to a point where you are able to talk to a helping professional, a therapist about it and start to disclose all the secrets that you have, it does. And I can relate to this and I know not everybody can, but I got inspired too. And I'm like, oh my God, now that I got this out, I got to heal. Who else can I tell? What else can I do? Give me more strategies. Give me more stuff. Like I got to figure it out. Cause I'm like, I spent, you know, decades ignoring it, pretending it didn't happen, rarely ever even acknowledging it or giving it a second thought. And then once it came out in the safety of a therapist's office, I'm like, holy crap. Like, you know, everything started clicking, all the puzzle pieces were fitting together, use whatever analogy you want. But I'm like, I've got to tell everybody, I've got to figure this out. And I remember my therapist kind of saying something very similar of like, whoa, okay, you know, we're uncovering a lot here. Let's take it slow. Let's see what happens. And of course, then the flashbacks came and everything else that you've mentioned. And So it was definitely a struggle. But, you know, I think something as we start to wrap up here to take away is it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get to a point of speaking up. But when you do, it can be very inspiring and very encouraging. It can also be very scary and invalidating and shameful. And so there's a whole spectrum of emotions that as much as you think you might be prepared for, you're probably not until you actually get in there and actually start feeling them and then gaining the confidence to start talking about it more.
Yeah, that's such a similar situation. I'm sure that there are a lot of us who've had really similar kind of experiences, and I would agree with you. And I would say that it would be helpful for survivors to have supports in place as much as possible as they prepare to do that work. And I know that for me, one of the biggest things I did, it wasn't until a few years later, but I was in a support group, and it was just for women. I mean, it was like women around my age, actually not even, it was all ages, but who had like depression and anxiety. And the fact that I was able to really talk about this freely with them and see reflected in them that it was just like one fact about me, and it didn't define me, and that they all were really behind me. For some reason, that was a piece that I just couldn't get from therapy, and I couldn't even quite get from my friends. It made a huge difference in my life. So, you know, having a variety of supports as you tackle your past is so important.
Yeah, it definitely is. And sometimes those support systems, like when I first started, I had nothing but a therapist. I'm like, nobody knows about this but me. Mm-hmm. She was the only one who I told, obviously. And then over time, I started to develop, you know, I was reaching out to like online Twitter chats and Facebook groups, and I was reading blogs and doing podcasts and stuff. And I discovered people locally and people virtually who I felt safe with, who I developed, you know, a trust with that I could tell them. And so it's important to remember that, you know, when you first start out, you may not have much of a support system. You may not have any, you know, but as you get the confidence to start sharing, you can start to find people who you can trust with your story, who aren't going to betray you, who aren't going to invalidate you. And then you start to build your own support system in addition to your therapist or psychologist or whoever it might be. So it's something that kind of happens over time. And, you know, don't be discouraged if you don't have much in the beginning, because God knows I didn't have anybody. But, you know, the more you do it, the more you can develop those safe relationships with people.
That's an excellent point. I would definitely agree with that. And you know, I didn't have the internet when I started dealing with this, believe it or not. But yeah, I think that you're really right. And I think, look at us now, we're at the point where we're open books, right? And this is just part of people who, you know, when I put out my first podcast episode, I ended up going to like a local event in my town, and there were all these people who came up to me and told me they'd listened to it that it hadn't even occurred to me. And things like my kid's teacher from a few years back and stuff like that. And it's like, it was a little bit disconcerting at first, but you know what? Now this thing that used to be a shameful secret to everyone, now anybody can know it about me. And what a journey that has been.
It is an incredible journey when you can get to a point where you're able to share your story, to not be ashamed of where you've been and what you've overcome, to be able to use your experiences to help others on a podcast, on a blog, in a therapy environment, in writing a book, in music, whatever it is. It's very inspiring, and you never know the lives you're going to touch just by being open and the amount of people who may have similar circumstances that maybe now are gaining confidence because of something that you did in speaking out. And so this has been amazing, Miranda. We love talking to you. I'm so glad you came back on the show. Definitely let us know where your podcast is, where your blog is, anything else you want to share, and how people can get in touch with you. That would be great.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay. Well, my website is called secondwound.com, and you can find everything from there. But I have a podcast called Truth and Consequences. I think I mentioned that the title already, and it's you can listen through my website, but it's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher and Google Podcasts. I have a really active Facebook page, and I even have a secret support group on there of over 100 survivors, where we can confide in each other, and support each other. And nobody knows that anyone's even in that. So that's nice. And I'm, you know, I have a social media platform on Twitter and Instagram. And I even do coaching as well, especially with this topic that people can read about through my website. And as well as my blog on the website has all of my published articles, and just, you know, things that I've written about on my own for the site about aspects of recovery. So yeah, it's been really a pleasure to talk with you guys. And it's kind of come full circle from that first interview way back when.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure having you with us, Miranda. And we really appreciate you sharing your story. I think our listeners are going to be so inspired by your story, and you might inspire them to start with their own healing process. So thank you so very much. It was a pleasure to get to know you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.